I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight. It's been a while since I've done this, so it's kind of nice. I've had several people ask me if I was nervous. Nah, not really. I know too many of these people. It's pretty easy to get up and talk to you folks. But I am a little bit concerned. Like Matt, I had some turkey for lunch, so I'm really hoping the preacher's on his game so I don't get sleepy. Might be trouble for everybody. It's good to be here. Something that I think about and have thought about a lot, because I know it's something that I need to work on, and that's why I chose this subject and why I feel like it's going to be easy to talk about, because I do think about it. And that's just how we treat each other, okay? The second greatest commandment is the title of my sermon. The first and greatest commandment that was asked of Jesus, okay? There was a time, if you look over in Matthew 22, 36 and 38. Jesus is talking, and he's got some Sadducees that's in the crowd. And he's asked, what is the greatest commandment? And he speaks on that. The greatest commandment that we have is to love God with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul. That's the first and greatest commandment. And for us as a people, okay, as human race, that's a fairly easy thing to do, is to love someone that loves us. I mean, think about it. All your friends, your closest friends, what is it about them that makes them your closest friends? Maybe it's the way that you think, okay? You guys think similar thoughts. You've got the same interest. You go to movies or you play sports together or you do baking or whatever it is, okay? There's something that is common. There's a common denominator there that makes your best friends your best friends. We love them. We love them because of that. And it's easy to do that because there is a commonality. Like God, okay? God first loved us. So it ought to be easy for us to love Him back. That's the first and greatest commandment. But what do we do about the people that just rub us the wrong way? What about the people that you work with that are on the power trip? They're just trying to climb up the corporate ladder. Oh, by the way, you're one of the steps, okay? And they don't mind putting footprints right up your back and across your neck and everything else as they go on, okay? What about the people that you go to school with that just don't like you, okay? Don't care for you. They don't like your attitude. They don't like your Christianity, okay? The fact that you're a Christian. And they malign you. They say things about you that's not true. Maybe they mistreat you a little bit further, a little physical activity. Maybe they throw things at you or they curse at you. We've all run into that, have we not? What about those people? What do we do with them? I mean, it's really a natural thing to not like them, isn't it? I mean, somebody treats you pretty roughly, curses at you, or just plain mistreats you, you can dislike them pretty easily. It's a natural thing. But we're not about natural things, are we? We're about spiritual things. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. The greatest commandment. Matthew 22, verses 36 through 38. And one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" And he said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your mind. I'm sorry, with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment." Well, let's stop right there for a second, because we've got some more reading to do in that those verses, but we've got something that we want to stop and talk about for just a second. How are we doing on this? How are we doing about loving our God with all of our mind and all of our heart and all of our soul? How are we doing on that? God tells us that if we love Him, we'll obey His commandments. Well, the very next commandment is something we're going to talk about. But there's a lot of commandments there that we need to follow. And I'm just asking you, how are you doing? Because if you truly love God, you're going to follow His commandments. The other aspect is how we teaching our children. Are we teaching our children this? Are we teaching our children to love God more than anything else? More than us, parents? Are we teaching our children you need to love God with everything that you have because He's the one that's going to save you in the end? He's the one that's going to say, enter into my kingdom, good and faithful servant, if they've done what they're supposed to do. And of course, it's a judgment call on His part. We just need to do the very best that we can. But are we teaching our children that so that they understand that the greatest commandment that we have is to love our God with all of our heart, all our mind, and all our soul? The second greatest commandment, if we continue reading in chapter 22, is like to the first. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now remember, he's talking to the Sadducees. So we're talking about really the old law. And on these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. Well, what are we talking about? We're talking about love. Love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Well, who is my neighbor? Jesus got asked that. If you would, turn over in Luke, if you would, chapter 10. I know everybody knows this story. Luke chapter 10, we start over in verse 25. Behold, a certain lawyer. We got these lawyers again. Okay. Behold, a certain lawyer stood up and put him to the test, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said to him, what is written in the law? How does it read to you? Now he asked the lawyer, okay, what's your interpretation of the law here? And he answered and said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, you have answered correctly. Do this, and you will live. But wishing to justify himself, he said to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Now the rest of the story is about the Good Samaritan. Remember the Good Samaritan. Traveling man, like myself, out on the road, he's going from point A to point B. There's some of us that do that, do a lot of traveling. Point A to point B. And as he's going along the road, he gets attacked by some robbers, and they beat him up. They beat him pretty severely. They leave him on the side of the road, probably for dead. Now, it's a busy enough road, so there's traffic, and a priest walks by. And he sees the man laying there, going to the other side of the road, keeps right on going. Walks right by him. A little bit later, a Levite comes along. Levite, priest, comes along, sees the man laying there, walks right on by him. Then a Samaritan comes along. Now, who are the Samaritans? Despised by the Jews. They were the people that was left over when captivity, when all the Jews were taken into captivity. They were ones that were left there to tend the gardens. Got intermixed with the other people that got brought in. So they were a mixed race, hated by the Jews, despised by the Jews. Samaritan comes along and finds this poor man laying there on the side of the road, and he bandages him up as best he can, puts him on his donkey, and takes him to the nearest inn. Drops him off, leaves him in the care of the innkeeper, and says, "Here's some money. Take care of him. I'll come back and check on him here in a few days, and if I owe you anything else, I'll pay you for it." Jesus asked the lawyer, he says, "Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands?" And he said, "The one who showed mercy toward him." And Jesus said to him, "Go and do the same." Go and do the same. Show mercy. What about those that's wronged me? What do I do about that? Ever get in traffic? I'm in traffic a lot. Ever get in traffic and you get this guy that is either right on your tail or he's doing the lane shift, you know, and every time you think you're going to get around someone, there he is, okay? Or maybe my favorite, okay, and Jesse, I'm sorry, truckers drive me crazy, I'm sorry. But it can get a little frustrating out there, especially when you're trying to get from point A to point B, okay? You got so much time to get there. Traffic is a challenge for me, okay? And I have to think about that. And that's really, just in the last couple of weeks, was what brought me to this point, thinking about this lesson. I don't know that guy. I don't know him. I don't know who he is. I have no knowledge what kind of individual that person is. But when he cuts me off, is it because he purposely did it just to irritate me? Or is it just because he's trying to get from point A to point B too? What about those office climbers? Ones that leave footprints on your back as they go on by? What about them? Do we hate them just because they're being what they are? No. You know, someone I was thinking about this morning in our class with Matt, we're talking about Islam. Yesterday we were out with Gary and Linda. We went and saw a movie and had something to eat. We were talking. We were sitting over at Panera Bread, sitting there eating, and there was a Muslim family that came in. She had her, was it burqa? She had her burqa on, and the little child was in the car seat. They came in. And I said something to Gary. It's like, how do you go about talking to someone as a member of another faith where you know that if you try to discuss with them God and you try to talk to them about the Bible and you tell them that, you know, Muhammad, we're not so sure about Muhammad, okay? We know. Actually, we do know about Muhammad. But how do you break that to someone that can say, "You've insulted me, and according to my faith, I got every right to kill you. And in my faith, I have that freedom to discuss and search the scriptures." How do you go about doing that with someone that has so much hate in their religion that they could, and then they may just decide that they want to kill you because you've insulted Muhammad, who was just a man? That gave me some thought. And, you know, that's a little thought-provoking. You know, and that's what I'm trying to do tonight. A little thought-provoking. You know, Paul and John Mark are some examples of someone that had, or a couple gentlemen that had a disagreement. If we look back over in Acts 13, it says, "Now Paul and his companions put out to sea from Paphos and came to Perga in Pamphylia. And John left them and returned to Jerusalem." Now, we don't know why John left, but he left. And it really didn't set well with Paul. If you go back over to Acts 15 and 39, now this is on the second missionary journey. Excuse me. Let's go back up in verse 36. "And after some days, Paul said to Barnabas, 'Let's return and visit the brethren in every city in which we proclaim the word of the Lord and see how they are.' And Barnabas, being desirous of taking John, called Mark along with them also. But Paul kept insisting that they should not take him along, who had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. And there arose such a sharp disagreement that they separated from one another, and Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus." Disagreement. Well, we really don't know how that was settled, but we do know that it was settled, because if we go over to 2 Timothy, chapter 4, verse 11, Paul saying, "Only Luke is with me. Pick up Mark and bring him with you, for he is useful to me for my service," or for service. They got it straightened out. They got it straightened out. Now, one thing that I do know is that if you really care about somebody and you have a disagreement, you'll work it out. This is an example for us, okay? We need to work out our differences. Now, if somebody really has wronged you, guess what? You have an obligation to them. Look over in Luke chapter 17, if you would, please. Jesus is talking to his disciples. He says, "Be on your guard. If your brother sins, rebuke him. And if he repents, forgive him. And if he sins against you seven times a day and returns to you seven times saying, 'I repent,' forgive him." What does it say? Rebuke. Okay, now I'm not saying get in someone's face. Okay? But if somebody sins against you, hurts your feelings, does something that you feel is unseemly, or maybe you just got your feelings hurt, okay? Maybe they don't know that. If you're really a brother or sister, you're going to go up and tell them. I know there's a, I was trying to think of it, it just came into my head, now I can't think of the whole thing. There's a Chinese philosophy about, you know, if you see a friend that's got a piece of corn or something in their teeth, you're going to tell them about it, because a friend will do that, okay? Someone that doesn't care about you will let you go around with a piece of corn stuck in your teeth, all right? If you're a friend, you're going to tell someone if they've hurt your feelings. That way they know. Rebuke them. You know, don't have to get in their face. Maybe you do. Maybe it's something that does need to be gotten in their face about. That's going to be up to you, how you handle it. But remember, a gentle word turns away wrath. Just tell them. Okay? You have an obligation. But guess what? They've got an obligation too. Look over in Matthew chapter 5. Matthew 5, 23 through 24. If therefore you are presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go your way. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. If you know that you've got an argument, a problem, an issue with a friend, a brother, a sister, resolve it. Get it taken care of. You need to do that. You really can't go forward in any kind of relationship with anyone if there's an issue. You got to resolve that. So you both have obligations. And if we both are loving God like we should, guess what? You're going to meet somewhere in the middle. If we're both doing what we're supposed to do, you're coming through the back door and I'm stepping this way, and we're going to meet somewhere right there in the middle. We're going to talk about it. We're going to get our problems resolved. That's what love is about. What's the Bible say about love? Well, in one of the reference materials I used online, there were 697 references to love. We're not going to go through all those tonight. But we do have some commands and some examples. Let's look over in 1 John chapter 3, okay? 1 John chapter 3. Verses 9 through 18. Now, I got a little bit of reading. This last section, this is crux of the biscuit, okay? No one who is born of God practices sin because his seed abides in him, and he cannot sin because he is born of God. By this the children of God and the children of the devil are obvious. Anyone who does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor the one who does not love his brother. For this is the message which you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Not as Cain, who was the evil one and slew his brother. For what reason did he slay him? Because his deeds were evil and his brother's were righteous. Do not marvel, brethren, if the world hates you. We know that we have passed out of death into life because we love the brethren. He who does not love abides in death. Everyone who hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. We know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our own lives for the brethren. But whoever has the world's goods and beholds his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and truth. It's easy to say we love someone. That's words. The way you prove it is by your deeds. How do you act towards someone? Do you help someone when they need it? We prove our love by our deeds. Over in 1 Peter 4 and verse 8. It says, above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. I remember when we were talking the class about forgiveness, this was something that was brought up. Sometimes you run into little incidences with your husband or wife or friends or whatever, and it's just not worth an argument. You know what I'm talking about? It's just not worth an argument. Love covers a multitude of sins. Sometimes it's just better to leave it alone. Let love handle it. Because eventually, what usually happens is somehow it gets around, the other person figures it out, and then they come back to you and say, yeah, sorry about that. Love covers a multitude of sins. We need to look out for the best interest of others. We're told that over in Philippians chapter 2. Philippians 2. One through four. Actually, let's just... Three through four. Do nothing from selfish or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each one of you regard one another as more important than yourself, himself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interest, but also for the interest of others. We need to think more highly of the other people's needs than our own. That's showing love. That's showing concern. That's making sure that the needs of others are met. Mothers do it all the time. Kids need fed. Mom goes hungry for a while until she gets kids fed. Okay? Or maybe something pops up and there's a knee that gets scraped and that needs to be tended to, so food goes to the back of the list. Right? Phone rings. You know, maybe an hour or two goes by before you finally get around to getting something to eat. Everybody else's needs are met before my own, okay? Dads, we could take that as an example. Some of us need to. I know I did when I was that age. Sometimes, we just got to make sure that other people's needs are met. Oh. Well, how do we produce this love? Okay, we got to work on it. Look over in 2 Peter, if you would, chapter 1. 2 Peter, chapter 1. Verses 5 through 8. These are called the Christian virtues. I know everybody has read these before, or maybe even know them by heart. Now, for this very reason also, applying all diligence, in your faith supply moral excellence, and in your moral excellence, knowledge, and in your knowledge, self-control, and in your self-control, perseverance, and in your perseverance, godliness, and in your godliness, brotherly kindness, and in your brotherly kindness, love. What's the greatest commandment? What's the second greatest commandment? Love, right? We all need to be working on love. Love for God, love for one another. Now you'll notice that this is at the end of that list. Love is the goal. If you're working on love, you're going to work on the rest of these. And these are the virtues of a Christian. So guess what? If you're working on learning how to love one another as we need to, you're going to be working on these virtues. These are virtues of a Christian. You're going to gain so much and be able to give so much. Look over in 1 Peter 3, if you would. Verses 8 and 9. To sum up, let all be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil, or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. We need to be harmonious and sympathetic and brotherly and kind and humble. Don't stoop to someone else's level. If they insult you, say thank you. Give them a blessing back. If they curse you, don't curse back. Show love and kindness and understanding, and try to make sure that they understand that the reason that this is because you have a hope for something better. And you can't get there being a vengeful, hateful person. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. This just about sums it up. If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I have become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. You're just noise. That's all you are. It's a bunch of noise. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I deliver my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant. Does not act unbecoming. Does not seek its own. It's not provoked, does not take into account a wrong suffered, does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails, but if there are gifts of prophecy, they will be done away with. If there are tongues, they will cease. If there is knowledge, it will be done away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when the perfect comes, the partial will be done away. When I was a child, I used to speak as a child, think as a child, reason as a child. When I became a man, I did away with childish things. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know fully, just as I also have been fully known. But now abide faith, hope, love. These three, but the greatest of these is love. The most important lesson we can know is love our God. But we also need to know we need to love man. God does. God sent His Son to die for us. Every one of us. Every one of us. Not just who's here or at the other church buildings around the country or around the world, but everyone. The path to heaven is built on love. Not the word, but the action. How we treat others. Now I have one question for you. How loving have you been? I've been asking myself that question. How loving have I been? I got some room to grow. How about you? The invitation is for those who have need. If you haven't been baptized and you know that you need to be baptized, this is the time. Don't hesitate. You don't know what's going to happen the minute we walk out the door. If you got something on your heart, you're already a Christian, and you need to make it right, we'll help you with that too. We're going to stand and sing the invitation song, and it's for you.